Good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans for the week of December 10th, 2018. As always, I am your host, Robert Vallejos, and I'm joined this week by my longtime tag team partner, Rick Monsey. Rick, how you doing this morning?
What is up, Robert? What is up, audience? How you guys doing today? We're basking in the shadow of an incredible main event, and I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, it seems like you've been a little more infrequent lately, Rick, but when you do come on, it's always right after really good fights. Are you kind of picking your spots here?
Yeah, exactly. I think that, you know, after we saw the zombie Yair Rodriguez fight, I was like, I got to be on this show. And now after this one, I was like, I definitely have to talk about this one. I just feel lucky to have had the opportunity to watch it with my schedule being at what it was. When I found out I was going to be able to watch this fight night live, I was excited, but I wasn't as hyped as I've been. But as it was going on, I was very, very blessed that I got to see that thing.
I like the way you use the term blessed there very strategically.
Yes. I'll, you know, with a nickname like that, it's pretty easy.
If you want to get in on the conversation with us or give us a question, a comment, or even a criticism, there are a couple ways to get in touch with the show. There's the main MMA Torch Twitter account at MMA Torch. That's at MMATORCH. And then there is the show proper Twitter account, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans at MMA Livecast. That's at MMALIVECAST. And of course, you could always hit us up on email. You can hit us up long form. Get a big question in there where there's no character limit. And the email address is MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALIVECAST@gmail.com. Okay, Rick, we got all the plugs and pleasantries out of the way. Let's get right into what we're talking about. UFC 231. We're just hours removed from the card taking place from Toronto. Seemed to be very, very well received all the way around. A ton of newsworthy stuff happening. What's your overall grade for this card, Rick?
I thought it was a really good card. I thought it really started off strong with the preliminary fight pass fights. And I mean, most of those, the first three ended in knockouts, and then we had a decision towards the end of it. And then, you know, the preliminary card was on FS1 was okay. It kind of slowed things down a little bit. But then once we got into Thiago Santos and Jimmy Manoa, we were guns a-blazing. And from that fight, we had a couple other slow ones, but then, or one slow one, then Gunner came in and made things exciting. We had a co-main event there that I will save my opinion for when we talk about it. And then we had possibly one of the best fights of the year with Max Holloway, Brian Ortega.
Yeah, that main card really, really delivered. Sometimes we complain that some of the better fights are stuffed at different parts of the card, but you really got a bang for your buck on pay-per-view. And Dana White in the press conference said that he feels that this fight, it was trending in the right direction on pay-per-view. I don't know. He says that a lot, so it's kind of hard to believe him if that's really going to be the case. But definitely within the UFC MMA bubble, there was a ton of buzz on this thing. And I am curious to see if it translates into a bigger audience. What is your sense on that?
I don't think it will. You know, I understand why people are interested in it. I mean, we were interested in it. In a lot of ways, this fight had the same kind of hype that Khabib and Tony Ferguson did last year, where it was like the two perceived number one and number two, or 1A, 1B young guns going at it. Now that Khabib and Ferguson still has a lot of potential to garner a lot of hype, it's not necessarily young guns anymore. They're both established figures. Max Holloway's been around and he's established, but Brian Ortega is kind of this new uprising stars. And as both these guys, I believe they're both 27 years old. It's like at the perfect time they fought in their prime. And you don't see this as often as you'd like. And so hopefully that generated some interest from the mass public. But I think that it's going to be kind of a typical sort of pay-per-view. Maybe they're on the same pay-per-view buys as DC, Derek Lewis. But, you know, I don't know if it's trending, getting good numbers pay-per-view-wise. What are people like hearing about how good the pay-per-view is so far in ordering it? Or they all of a sudden became interested in this fight? I don't know how that works.
Yeah, that's kind of a vague term that Dana often uses. I know Meltzer has pointed to like certain social media indicators will usually they'll correlate with high pay-per-view numbers. But I just don't know how exact of a science that actually is. in the main event, as we mentioned, Max Holloway taking out Brian Ortega in between the fourth and fifth round due to a doctor stoppage. Brian Ortega could not open his eyes, and he was very, very beat up. This was a very brutal fight from the perspective of Brian Ortega, and Max Holloway did take his fair share of lumps from Ortega in the process. Before we talk about the mechanics of the fight, let's talk about the star on top, Max Holloway, who came out on top. And as Mike and I talked about last week, and we're kind of mentioning here, Max Holloway is like the biggest star that nobody knows about. And it's not that he's not uninteresting. He's not, you know, he's not boring in any way. He's not unlikable in any way. In fact, he's very interesting and very likable. He just has not become a big star. And I don't think it has anything to do really to fault of his own. He's just been on a lot of pretty cold UFC cards. Do you think, even though he is a headliner in his own right, does he need to be stuffed on one of these massive cards? Does he need to be stuffed on the undercard of a John Jones, of a Cormier, of a Conor McGregor or Habib? Does he need to be there so people can see him?
It wouldn't hurt, but at the same time, I mean, we'll see what the pay-per-view numbers are for this one, but he might have done pretty well by himself. And I think that UFC needs a couple more fighters now that can hold their own and just get a baseline pay-per-view buy. But I see what you're saying is if they keep doing that with him, he's never going to expand to the wider audience. So, yeah, I mean, next time John Jones or Conor McGregor has a fight, it wouldn't hurt to put him on the co-main because, you know, he's going to produce an exciting fight. And it's not his fault that some of the cards he's been on top of haven't been the biggest draws in the entire world. But his performance was incredible, and I hope that more people can see it. This is one of those cards where if it was closer to Christmas, they would replay it. You remember how they did one of the other Max Holloway fights that he had against Anthony Pettis. They replayed
He talked about that in the post-fight presser, saying that, you know, he wants to keep his streak alive of getting the Christmas replay.
Yeah, this definitely deserved the Christmas replay. And so that's something they could do too, at least with this fight. It's too late to put John Jones on top of this card to garner that big audience. But yeah, they should at least replay this for the Fox holidays as a send off to the Fox audience. That would be nice.
Right. And it might be a moot point because the way everybody's talking, like he's in line for a super fight. So it might just be a moot point where his opponent will be one of those guys that you would think you would stuff him underneath. What's the prospects for him going forward? Was this his swan song at featherweight?
I hope so. You know, I didn't really realize how bad everything was going with him until, you know, he was taken out of the original fight with Ortega. And then when you look at him, he does look incredibly unhealthily skinny. And you just wonder, like, what kind of speed and power would he retain if he went up in weight? And he would only, it seems, get stronger, you know, if he adds a little bit more muscle. So I think for the longevity of his career, I think he should, you know, gain the extra 10 pounds. What do you think? Do you think he should stay if he wants, or do you think he should be forced to go up?
Well, I don't know about forcing him to go up. And Dana was making a lot of noise about that, but he really wants to see him at 155. And it's been noted that, look, he had a title fight at 155 and was struggling with the weight cut there. That's why he was pulled out of that fight. So obviously there are some issues there. I just don't know right now what's really left at featherweight in addition to the health concerns. Like, he's beaten basically everybody but Frankie Edgar. And I've said this for months, that Frankie Edgar fight's going to kind of hang out there, and it might not ever disappear. So there might be that one fight for him. But until somebody else in the division really, really steps up and moves their way and becomes sort of that undisputed contender, there's not a lot for him to do there. So I think there's just so much more interesting fights at lightweight that's just the next logical step, I would think, for all of them. Obviously, he probably just doesn't want to relinquish the title because of all the financial incentives that are involved with being a champion. So that's where it gets kind of tricky, but that's definitely where I would prefer to see him for a multitude of reasons.
Yeah, I mean, his only two real prospects out there are Frankie Edgar and Moicano. And the problem with Frankie Edgar, yeah, it'll linger, but also you fight Frankie Edgar, there's a good chance you're going to lose. You know, you could take as good as Holloway is, Frankie Edgar is hard to beat. And that's why Brian Ortega was, you know, thrown a jetpack on his back and sent up so high because he knocked Frankie Edgar out. But otherwise, you know, Frankie's usually a game for to be the spoiler. So if I was Max Holloway, I wouldn't get much money from that fight. There wouldn't be a ton of interest garnered from him versus Frankie Edgar, in my opinion. Not as much as at least if he went over to lightweight and fought a Tony Ferguson or a Dustin Poirier or something like that. That, to me, is where the fights get really interesting. I mean, I would like to see him go against Habib. That would obviously be a big-time fight. But I'm more interested to see him go against El Cucuy, Tony Ferguson. I think that would be just an incredible fight.
I think that would be a incredible fight because it's like it feels like a better matchup in that these two guys that have the Khabib and to an extent Holloway are kind of one dimensional. They're very good at those dimensions. Whereas against Ferguson, I think there'd be multiple levels to the fight.
Yeah.
So I think that's what would make that interesting. I want to see it all though. I think any fight that division's so exciting as it is. And then to add in someone who's on absolute fire like Max Holloway to that division, I think that's a win-win proposition pretty much no matter who you put him against. But again, being the champion, I don't see like a champion from a division going over and fighting a non-champion. Like, wouldn't that seem kind of odd?
Yeah, it would seem odd. It's almost like, hey, give us your title. Now go fight for the number one contendership. But it's tough to say with, I mean, maybe they can put him right in there with Khabib because you got to see what happens with Ferguson. And obviously, it doesn't sound like they're going to be even trying to do the Conor McGregor Khabib rematch right away, which they shouldn't. So Khabib might actually be looking for an opponent. I just think Khabib and Ferguson is just never going to happen. Or if it does, it's not going to happen. You know, it might actually be a replacement fight. So if, you know, if they really want to tempt Holloway out of 155, say, hey, go against Khabib.
Yeah, that would be the case. Or I think the exception, the obvious exception to any rule is Conor McGregor. So if you want to do a rematch with Holloway and McGregor, that's worth, I think, advocating your title for that one payday.
Yeah, I just, you know, with McGregor, you got Poirier out there. You got a couple different options. He's actually looking for an interesting opponent, too. I don't know if Holloway is the one for him, but we can see.
Right, and then we're a few hours away or from, depending on when you're listening to this, from the disciplinary hearings for both Khabib and Conor from UFC 229. So I think that is going to dictate a lot of what's going to happen here.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting all around. I think for now, Max just needs to take the rest of the year off, and hopefully we'll see his fight being replayed on Fox for the general audience.
Well, there's only 3 weeks left in the year, so I definitely hope he takes the rest of the year off.
No more fighting, Max.
What do you make though of his promo skills? What did you make of his?
They're terrible.
Really?
People were still thinking he was displaying concussion syndrome when he was just being interviewed normally this week. I think that's the way he is. And I think, you know, people find it not, I wouldn't say charming, but there's a certain amount of like, It's his style, you know, just kind of the rambling and just the non sequiturs and stuff. But I actually find it kind of I'm not a big fan, but I understand why people are. I could barely listen to it in the post fight interview. I just find it. I love what he does in the octagon, but as soon as that mic goes to his face, I just kind of like zone out. But I know I'm in the minority, I guess.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's great. I think he comes up with intelligent stuff. I was trying to contrast that with that awkward Tony Ferguson post-fight presser a couple of months ago. And I was like, wow, yeah, they're not even, to me, they weren't even in the same league or in the same stratosphere. But the big talk, was despite who he was going to fight against, and this, I think, mostly came from Rogan. Rogan was all in on declaring Max Holloway the greatest featherweight of all time, you know, unquestionably. Where do you stand on that?
I mean, I always just want to take a step back. My 3-day rule, you know, everything seems the greatest in the moment. But, you know, Jose Aldo, I know that to be the man, you got to beat the man. Max Holloway beat Jose Aldo twice. But that being said, Jose Aldo is probably still the greatest featherweight of all time. And I think that we just got to see a little bit more out of Max Holloway, because as good as he's been, and you know, he's on this impressive win streak that's almost going to be record setting at one point, he's still like, before he beat Anthony Pettis, you know, he had a unanimous decision against Ricardo Lamas, against Jeremy Stephens, he had against Cole Miller, you know, and these aren't bad victories. He had some KOs in there, but I really want to see him start fighting the best of the best. You know, yeah, he beat Aldo twice. He just beat Brian Ortega. He beat an Anthony Pettis who was not in his prime. So his last three fights were very, you know, a declining Aldo and an up and coming Brian Ortega. But let's see him Well, he might not even be in the division anymore and in his next fight. So, no, I still give it to Aldo.
Hey, if you're a fan of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which you obviously are if you're listening to this right now, check out Solomonster Sounds Off. It's a weekly show covering all the latest news in the world of wrestling, from WWE to Lucha Underground, New Japan, and everything in between. Plus, listener Q&A, rankings, and more. Check it out in iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or download directly from thesolomonster.com.
Yeah, it's complicated, and that's why it's dumb when Rogan goes off so hyperbolic like that. Like, unquestionably, there's no doubt in anyone's mind, you know, that's what makes that kind of ridiculous. It's not that he's necessarily wrong, but I think it deserves a little more thought and nuance to it. I think the recent victims of Holloway are so impressive, and the way he's got those victories make it so impressive that it's kind of like the shiny toy aspect to it, where it's interesting, it's fun, it's been exciting. But you look at all those opponents and who he beat during his very, very, very long reign at the top, and those are no scrubs either. The difference being is the guys that Holloway beat, what they look like now in 2018 versus the guys that Aldo beat, including Edgar, in 2018, don't look as impressive. And that's just a matter of time. That happens with every fighter. Like eventually people start saying, oh, well, you know, GSP's opponents weren't that impressive, or Anderson Silva's opponents weren't that impressive. Yeah, they're not that impressive now because you've seen the entirety of their career. They probably fought their last couple of fights and didn't look so great. But in the moment, they were very, very good. So I think there's a chance Holloway could be the greatest featherweight of all time, but I just don't think it's such a cut and dry deal the way Rogan was proclaiming it to be. Overall, what'd you make of the commentary last night? You had Felder, Rogan, and Anik.
I thought Felder did an okay job as the third man. Anik, so he was good. And Rogan, you know, I enjoy hearing him when we get the opportunity. So I didn't mind it as much. I was actually kind of interested to see how Felder would do with the duo. I don't know if they've worked together in a pay-per-view before, but it stuck out to me this time. And I thought Rogan treated Felder with respect. And, you know, he didn't have the same kind of rivalry he did with Dominic Cruz, where it's just this bickering. And Felder, I don't think, tries to take over the booth as much as Daniel Cormier does. Daniel Cormier, you know, when he's announcing, his presence is being felt, whether it's positive or negative. But I think Felder just kind of blends in the background. So I didn't mind it at all. If you insist on having a three-man booth, which I don't think they need to, you can always go to two. What is the thing with three nowadays? Just, it was fine with Goldie and Rogan forever ago. So anyways.
In any sport, a three-man booth with pro wrestling, football, three-man booths are just, that's just too crowded. When it's not a podcast, it's not something where you're strictly focused on your ears. It's all supposed to be this whole experience. And I don't know why these companies insist on three-man booths. That was the best I thought Felder has done. I'm not a fan of his commentary as much as some other people are. I think he's got good tone and cadence. He just tends to go off on not necessarily tangents, but the fear of criticizing fellow fighters, I felt, has been a weakness of his. And I think he was filtered out a lot better. Like, the three-man booth, as much as I just complained about it, actually served him pretty well. And you didn't have to have Dominic Cruz in there, which is a positive to any UFC broadcast. So overall, decent broadcast. I think Rogan, you know, we were making fun of Rogan or criticizing Rogan, kind of felt like he had his feet up a little bit last night. Like, you know, not that he wasn't taking the whole thing seriously, but he kind of seemed pretty relaxed comparatively to how he can normally sound. Let's talk about the fight itself, though. This was a wholly dominating performance by Holloway. And it's rare, I think, you get a wholly dominating performance by one man. But he kind of, in a way, for lack of a better term, put Ortega over through this fight, too. Because when Ortega did tag Holloway, those were some bombs that Ortega was throwing out. But the MMA style of boxing that Holloway was employing here was just as crisp as you could be. What did you make of the actual performance of Holloway in this fight?
It seemed like almost every punch from the second round on for Holloway was connecting, especially like in the fourth round. Like, every punch he threw was connecting on Brian Ortega's face. It was incredible. He was throwing, like, at one point he threw a five punch combination and every punch connected to Brian Ortega's nose and body. It was unreal. I mean, I was looking at the fight metric numbers, and Max Holloway for strikes, 290 to Brian Ortega's 110.
Yeah, it was record setting.
290. That's insane. To put that in perspective, the very strike heavy co-main event had 89 and 78. So it almost doubled the amount of punches that Valentina and Jan Jacek threw at each other just from Max Holloway's output.
Yeah, there was like, a lot of, like you said, there's a lot of striking in that. That fight was kind of marked by its striking. No, it was record setting. And then as Holloway commented after, it's actually the record kind of has to be shared by Ortega, because there's been a lot of guys that have thrown a lot of output, but usually someone goes down when you throw that much output.
I know.
But Ortega did it. What do you make of Ortega last night and then his prospects going forward?
Well, I think, like you said, he got put over even in the loss, whereas he was just tough as nails. And he did, you know, he was pretty well dominated throughout the fight. But in the third round, it looked like he could be turning things around. Like, he had Max Holloway on wobbly legs, and he just couldn't find the takedown. And I know he knocked out Frankie Edgar, so he trains in boxing, and he probably had some confidence in that area. But he's not on Max Holloway's level. When you're not on the level of someone else, and at least the striking department, the other thing you rely on is your other tools. And he just couldn't get to work with them. Like, he could never get Holloway down. And so without the prospect of a submission threat or any sort of grappling, it was just striker versus striker. And Max Holloway is just such a better and more superior striker. And Brian Ortega was a human punching bag from rounds 1, 2, and 4. And it was, you know, he's a tough guy. And I hope this didn't take any time off his career, because to be stopped in after a round like that, and it reminded me a little bit of a Junior Dos Santos, Cain Velasquez fight in some ways.
Yeah, it's just, you know, a lot of people were buzzing about him last night, but fighters aren't always so good after they come through those type of fights when they take that type of damage. You know, sometimes they might become different fighters, and you really hope that's not the case, because especially if Max moves on, he might just be the next champ, whether it's in an interim situation or not. Like, you would think he's still the top guy in that division outside of Holloway. And that's another thing, I think bookend Holloway's performance is, I don't think there was any question that those were the two best featherweights competed last night. And one was so much better than the other. And I think that really just speaks to how good Max Holloway has become at this point in time.
Yeah, where do you think he goes after this? Like you said, if Holloway leaves, then that kind of leaves the featherweight division open for a Brian Ortega to come back and fight someone for an interim or the actual championship.
I'd assume would you want be to see Aldo?
Oh, that'd be a great fight.
Yeah, what like a legacy fight too for Ortega and for Aldo to fight one of the newer age guys and one of the young guns late in his career. Yeah, I think that's what could happen. He's another guy too that's fought a lot of these same guys though that Holloway has fought. He's got a lot of good victories. That's why, even though it happened relatively quick, he ascended properly through the ranks. So there's not actually not a lot left for him to do, unless other than to become champion, which he missed his opportunity last night. But I don't think they'd have any qualms about booking an Aldo Ortega interim title fight. Or yeah, undisputed title fight.
Yeah, exactly. I've always wanted to see Aldo at lightweight to see where he goes from there. But, you know, if he stays at featherweight, I think, yeah, a Brian Ortega fight, even after the loss, Ortega still, you know, he didn't get knocked out cold. He didn't get submitted. He just, you know, he was stopped. And so I think it's like going out on your shield. And I think you can get the audience to buy another title opportunity from that. You know, people are even saying a rematch. I heard a couple of people asking Dana, would you want to see a rematch of this fight? And I'm not interested in that at all. I think that, I mean, if you had the two best going at each other like you did last night, one was clearly better. And I don't think that anytime soon Ortega is going to develop something that will make a different result happen. I just don't think Max Holloway is going to be on his back and allow Brian Ortega to use his tools.
There's no need for one.
The
fight, very entertaining, but wasn't close. So, you know, if there's a fight that's very, very close, sometimes you want to see another one. Or if the title changes hands, you want to see someone get their redemption. Or if somebody who was heavily favored gets upset, you want to see, was it a fluke? I don't think any of those parameters are in place to see a rematch here. But it was all good at the top of the featherweight division. It's kind of nice to see them having a great main event kind of in the post, although McGregor years. But let's move on to women's flyweight, which finally has a new champion. Valentina Shevchenko taking out Joanna Jędrzejczyk by decision, getting 49-46s across the board. I don't think there'd be any argument with that decision. Fight wasn't the most entertaining, but it did have its moments Specifically, Valentina's kicks I find very, very entertaining, how she's able to land them, especially that double front kick combo that she can land very, very easily. I thought Ioana looked good here. She just looked completely outmatched, though, by Valentina. What'd you think of this one, Rick?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting to see such two elite fighters go at each other. But with that being said, I was pretty bored with this fight. And I know that I'm going to get a lot of heat from I consider myself to be a diehard, so from other fellow diehards, I could appreciate the striking capabilities and just, you know, like you said, the kicks from Shevchenko. But I think Joanna Violence is a declining fighter at this point. And I hate to say that because, you know, yeah, she lost to Rose Namajunas twice, won by a pretty vicious knockout, then a decision, and she caught back with a Tisha Torres fight. But even that Tisha fight wasn't, to me, very exciting. I've become sort of numb to Ioana's fights. She seems like a great person, and I used to enjoy watching her fights a lot. But I would say I haven't really been excited watching one of her fights since 2016, to be perfectly honest. Besides the Rose fight where it went to a decision, but she was at the losing end of that. I don't know where she goes from here. But I think she should go back to 115 and put together one or two knockouts. And then, yeah, we can see the rematch with Rose. But this is all Shevchenko all day. And I think that Shevchenko is an interesting prospect and could be a good champion. And she seems to have a kind of a big fan base behind her, or bigger than I thought. But, yeah, I think that it was an interesting fight, but it's not one I'll ever rewatch.
Yeah, it was a fight that, you know, kind of it played out to these women's strengths, and the stronger of the two women did so. Ioana, after the fight, didn't give a lot of indication that she wanted to go back to strawweight other than for a title fight. She said she wants to get that belt back, but she doesn't actually want to fight in the division anymore. She said she felt so much better fighting here at flyweight, which means she'll have to get a few more wins under her belt, I would think, to get a rematch, although the division itself just doesn't have a ton of structure anyway. So that's always tough when you're building a new division to sort that thing out. I know Jessica Ai was getting some run for getting a title fight, which I don't know what world we're living in when Jessica Ai now has somehow found herself in title contention. At the same time, Valentina has said that if her sister rises through the ranks, she would then she wants to go back and get what she claims to be her rightful belt from Amanda Nunes back at bantamweight. So we may see these women kind of depart the division and then re-enter at some point in time. And you know, Jacek, her declining is interesting. It's been a while since she finished a fight. It's been many, many years. And I think her fight against Jessica Andrade was the one that people were getting kind of bored with. I think when she faced Carolina Kovalevich, that was a very good fight, and she still looked like she was on her game. But again, that was 2 years ago, 2016, like you said. So I don't really know where she's at. I feel like there's still an unknown to see where she's at. Obviously, I think technically she looked great last night, but there's a lack of power there that I think has been the case for a while. And I don't know if that was cured by fighting in the new weight class, but you also have somebody with a very tough, you know, very tough chin and very good defensive skills in Valentina. So it's kind of hard to figure out where everybody goes from here. Any sense of who could be Valentina's first opponent as champion?
Yeah. I don't know if you have Nico come back and get the rematch, but yeah, I was just looking at this flyweight division ranking, and it needs to figure itself out for a little while, but Valentina seems like she wants to stay busy. So give it to Nico, if she's available, don't give it to Eubanks. Yeah, I don't know. It's a mess right now. What do you think?
Oh, I'm with you. Like, there's
a bunch of names I recognize, but none of them like.
But not like that woman needs a title shot. There's none that go there. I mean, like I said, Jessica Ai beat Chookagian last night, who was pretty high in the rankings. I don't know if you could trust Sajara. And then, well, just a lot of these other women with resumes from other weight classes, as were the women that fought last night. So it's hard to say who the better flyweight is. That just hasn't been determined yet.
Not yet. No, just let it self-sort. Just pair up a couple fights and get Valentina a number one contender, because Yeah, I mean, you're looking at number five or six or something like that to find a decent opponent for her. So, honestly, it could be Jessica Ai. That'd be hilarious.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah.
What a world we'd be living in if that turns out to be the case.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So let's talk about the third fight from the top. Gunnar Nelson taking out Cowboy Alex Oliveira with a rear naked choke in the second round. Now, I'm pretty sure that Cowboy bladed in this fight. What do you think?
That was disgusting. And the fact they kept showing the slow-mo of the blood just coming out. There's only a few moments in MMA where there's been that much blood that quickly, you know, and it's like that. And then there was the Alistair Overeem when he went against Curtis Blaydes, and Blaydes was just cutting Overeem's face up. Remember that? That was on a prelim fight. And I think the Bigfoot versus Cain Velasquez was a sustained bleeding the first time they went at it. But my gosh, the blood from that elbow is just a perfect elbow. And it looked like Alex Overeem, a piece of his eyebrow was sticking out, like his skin was folded back. It was just brutal. And it was that impressive performance from Gunnar Nelson, because he was getting beat up in that first round.
Yeah, that was something else. And to talk about Oliveira's face, you know, they say the crimson mask, but it literally looked like he was wearing a mask, because the blood like outlined his face so perfectly. It was something else. It was something like out of a horror movie. It didn't look like blood from a fight because of how much it is. It almost looked like fake.
Yeah, it was just so, this is going to sound morbid, but it was just so red. Like, it was incredible. And, you know, this is the bloodthirsty, disgusting human being in me. I kind of was hoping the fight would go on a little longer, because there's something about, like, having, like, we saw a fight a couple weeks ago where both guys were just bleeding, and it's just like, you know, it's like this gladiatorial sort of display. But, I mean, Alex Oliveira was like done, you know, like I think he submitted just out of pain. Like that submission was just barely in. And he was like, I'm done. I'm about to die over here. And
well,
so,
yeah, it might have been self-preservation really to not lose more blood.
I don't think he was submitted at all. I think he was just, I just got elbowed in the face harder than I've ever been elbowed. And now I'm going to be real near get choked. Just get me a towel.
And then to your point about the submission not being locked in after the fight, Gunnar said, you know, he became very slippery that amount of blood, which I guess that's kind of obvious there. Rick, do you want to say anything about the one dud on the main card?
It was a dud. That's the fight we used to order our food from Postmate. So no, that was, gosh. And you know, you had such high hopes for the Bochniak, sort of like, you know, he's been putting them together, and Dawadu seemed like he could have been like, they both seem crisp, but you know, that fight, they even said this was brought up from the prelims. It's going to be a really good display, and it wasn't. Really wasn't. Yeah, it was. It could have been swapped out for something else for sure. But I think it's unfortunate for them that they were following one of the most entertaining Rock and Sock and fights I've seen in recent memory.
Let's talk about that. And he's talking about the pay-per-view opener, light heavyweight between Thiago Santos and Jimmy Manoa. Santos getting the KO punch at 41 seconds of the second round, but that thing was back and forth like crazy. It was entertaining, but also I didn't look at it as high level MMA, and those two things can exist at the same time. Do you get what I'm saying, Rick?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That was one of those fights where, you know, it's almost like fan matchmaking. They're like, let's just take these two heavy hitters and put them together and see what happens. And while it was entertaining in the moment, I don't know how big of a rewatch value it has, because, you know, they were throwing bombs when they were throwing, but there was a lot of clinching. But when you're watching it live, you don't really care about that because you understand once they separate, they're going to be throwing bombs to kill each other again. So at the moment when you're watching it live, it almost built the tension. You know what I mean? Like right off the bat, Tiago Santos was throwing at Jimmy. Jimmy Manoa looked like he was out almost instantly. And then Jimmy Manoa ties him up. And then they get separate, start punching each other again, you know, tie it up. And usually when you see guys like this or heavyweights this big clinch up, you get bored and there's booze. But like the fans just could not wait for the separation. It was like almost a perfect way to build a climax. It was very entertaining fight. But yeah, like you said, it wasn't like the art of MMA or anything. It was just two guys beating the crap out of each other. Yeah. And this is why I think that while boxing has had fights similar to this, boxing – and again, another heat generator statement right here. Boxing will never have fights like this where, you know, they didn't really throw many kicks or anything. This is all punches, but it was very like a, you know, bar brawl. And this is what I love about MMA. We can have high class, like scientific fighting, like Valentina Shevchenko or Joanna Jędrzejczyk, or we can have this. And it's just so fun. And that's what makes this sport so interesting and diverse.
Well, a boxer would never reach the highest level if he had that kind of technique, right? Like, it just wouldn't happen. But as you said, that can happen. And it was funny. I was in the moment, I'm kind of thinking, oh, cool. Well, light heavyweight's always so shallow. So maybe we can get one of these guys elevated pretty quickly. And then as I think about it more, like, wait a minute, Bones or Gustafson would kill one of these guys. Like, no, let's just keep these guys where they're at. But we knew this was going to be good. And I think it exceeded all of our expectations of what that fight could be. Rick, quickly want to breeze through the prelim and the fight pass card. What do people need to go and rewatch for those portions of the card?
You guys definitely need to rewatch the UFC fight pass prelims if you didn't get a chance. The main event was okay, the fight pass prelims, but nothing that you need to watch. But the Lima fight was great. Yeah, the Kyle Nelson, Diego Ferreira fight was really good. And the first one, Rat Kick versus Devin Clark was fun. Those things you can just watch. If you watch all three of those fights, you'll be done in less than 10 minutes. And as far as the preliminary card goes, what do you think of the FS1 prelims?
They kind of were Fox level. Not Fox. They were FS1 fights and pacing. I mean, it was a lot of fights that went to the decision. The main event, though, was a shocking result. So we
shocking, that. Especially for you.
Nina Ansaroff taking out Claudia Gadelha, and she was a huge underdog. And, you know, Gadelha is kind of in that that top level of the strawweight division. She's always been right up there. And Ansaroff, I wouldn't say she's unknown because she is known because of her connection to Amanda Nunes, but not necessarily known as a fighter. And she got the decision there. But it was a lot of decisions, and especially the opener with Theodoro and Eric Anders, as we talked about last week. Theodoro is a good fighter that wins a lot of boring fights. And Eric Anders, man, it's been so up and down for him for about the last year, where he was going to get the rocket strapped to him. But I think the reality of what MMA is has finally caught up to him.
Ever since he grew his hair on fought you, Lyoto Machida, it's just something about that. He needs to cut it. And yeah, Theodoro, man, that fight, I fell asleep during that fight, actually.
And you're on the West Coast, so it wasn't even late.
I know. I was back to coffee during the Jessica Eye fight. And we were joking about Jessica Eye, and I need to explain myself. I don't know how she wins fights with the way she fights. Like, I think it's one of those fighters that, you know, she connects with just enough that she's getting these split decisions. Or, I mean, I'm not saying anything bad personally. I'm just talking about aesthetically. Like, I don't know what she needs to do to if she got one knockout anytime soon, that would probably help her. I mean, UFC wants her to be someone bad. You can tell. And it's just like she doesn't have these performances that I think garner or allow it.
No, she's the great mystery of MMA. How did she lose like five fights in a row? It's still got high profile fights for years and years. And now it's on a 3-fight winning streak. But as you said, uninspiring. But like, I've always wondered, like, does she have something on Dana White, some really damaging information that that if she released it would ruin the company or something? I've never got the whole Jessica Eye thing.
No, I think that she's not very exciting. But, you know, for the most part, it was fun to watch the fight pass prelims and then do other stuff during the preliminary card. But I'm glad that this one turned out to be so top heavy exciting, and that, Yeah, no real complaints. You know, the fights that were pretty boring were the ones that were free, so I'm fine with that.
And whenever there's like 12 fights, there's going to be boring ones.
Yeah, it's just interesting. They were all like pretty much put together.
Yeah, which kind of hurts because then you have a 2-hour block where you're just like you're yawning your way through it. Or as Rick took the next step, it just straight up went to sleep. So
yeah, just unconscious.
Rick, let's move on. Let's talk about let's look ahead to the UFC's first card on ESPN or ESPN Plus, should we say. Now, it's not till January 19th, so we're still over a month away. But that card gained a ton of notoriety this week for multiple reasons. First, let's talk about the main event that it got. It borrowed a main event from the upcoming pay-per-view from UFC 233. It's going to get the still flyweight title fight between Henry Cejudo and TJ Dillashaw. What do you think of this move, Rick?
I think this is a very strategic move. I think it's a smart idea from Dana White, but I also think he's setting himself up to set a bar that he's not going to be able to match in the future. There's no way fights like this are going to continue to happen on ESPN Plus. But if you want to start off strong, that's fine. I think the president of ESPN Plus was sitting next to Dana White. He mentioned that at this card. So it's probably going to be like, hey, we're going to set you up right, buddy, right from the bang. And so, yeah, I love this fight being on for free. I don't know what they're going to do in the follow-up pay-per-view, but that's okay. It's not my problem. I think that this fight card needed this, though, because, mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the rest of the fight card, while it does have some recognizable names, this is actually a very weak card. And so for your first fight on UFC Fight Pass – or I'm sorry, on ESPN Plus – you want to start off strong, and this is the way to do it. They just better hope this fight doesn't suck.
Well, it's a way to sell this thing with some uniqueness. Like, you know, you have two champions fighting each other for this belt. You have Henry Cejudo, the guy that beat the unbeatable Demetrius Johnson and sent him packing to China. So there's a lot of storylines I think you can build for this. And to be honest with you, did you really want to pay $60 to watch that fight?
No.
I know I didn't. I always thought it was weird. The whole TJ Dillashaw super fight thing. I think TJ Dillashaw is a great fighter, great champion, has really entertaining fights or can have entertaining fights. They're not always so great up at bantamweight, but I never got the sense that him fighting the flyweight champion was this mega box office draw that some people were making it out to be. So now I think it's in a good place where I think it's a little more accessible. And like you said, a really good way to start off the card, maybe setting the standards a bit too high, but that's just kind of what happens. The first time, we'll talk about this later, the first time the UFC was ever on Fox, they had a heavyweight title fight within their bounds. And we'll see it, you know, you see it in the WWE. Remember the main event show, Undertaker was like on the first episode, and then he was never on ever again, but you had that footage to use him on there forever. So I think that's just kind of how these things work. But let's talk about the more controversial aspect of this card. Now, we hadn't talked too much about this on this show because I didn't feel there was much to say. And the situation I'm referring to, obviously, is Rachel Ostevich, who was originally removed from the card due to injuries suffered at the hands of her husband in a very, very bad domestic violence incident. It had been on the site itself. We just hadn't talked about it on the show because there wasn't much to say that, like, we're not going to debate if domestic violence is a good or bad thing. That should just be inherent to our conversation. But she did get reinstated on the card, which is good to see. You know, just that's awesome that she could go on living her life as she planned, you know, before all this happened. And it's good to see even her opponent, Paige VanZant, being very supportive of her in the process. With that said, where this picked up a ton of controversy this week was this same card is also going to be the debut of the UFC debut of Greg Hardy. Now, if that name sounds very, very familiar, it is because Greg Hardy is the former NFL player, very good defensive player with the Panthers and the Cowboys, who basically ran out of the league because of his history with domestic violence. He beat up his girlfriend there in Carolina very, very badly, threw her onto a bed of guns. You can see the pictures online. It is some nasty stuff. He lost a year of his career. Jerry Jones brought him in. He was a complete loser with the Cowboys. And then nobody else ever picked him up. Then he got himself into MMA and has done a very, very good job in MMA. But the optics of that seem to raise the dander of a lot of people. You know, you have this person who's fighting, who is a survivor of domestic violence and then a domestic abuser on the exact same card. Before we get into Dana's response, What do you think of just that on principle happening, Rick?
Yeah, it's not very good timing. If you're insisting on employing someone like Greg Hardy, and then you have someone who's been very publicly involved in a situation as a victim, why in hell do you put them on the same card? You have 60 cards a year. Just put them on a different card. And I was actually re-looking at this card, and I don't see his name listed anywhere. Usually Wikipedia will release it. You know, the fights that have been announced before UFC officially puts them on their website. But I don't see Greg Hardy's name anywhere near this. This might be a thing that changes pretty quickly because Dana is probably just sick of it.
Well, it could be, other than that I think Dana likes to dig his heels in. And because, and that's where we'll go with it now. Dana White, you know, been very defensive about it, says he's sick of being asked about it. Greg Hardy's on the roster, just get over it. And he said that he's talked to Rachel Ostovich and she's okay with it. Well, I mean, great. Like,
yeah.
Like, shut up, Dana. Like, what a stupid thing to say in general. Maybe she is. I mean, she's so young in her career. I'm sure she just wants to get a fight in and it doesn't directly affect her. So, you know, good for her. I'm glad that she's able to do that. But maybe you should think about things. Maybe you should consider things.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
And to me, I get why all the outrage over this week. And I think it's justifiable because, like we said, like, God, like how can you be that bad just from like a PR standpoint? Like, how can you be that stupid? But they did. Like, why would you even create this headwind? But this just goes to the whole idea of why is Greg Hardy in the UFC in the first place? I think that's the overarching issue here. And I've been saying this for a long time. And my issue with it, it's not necessarily about second chances or rehabilitation or whatnot. For me, it's about the fact that the only reason that Greg Hardy is in the UFC, the only reason Greg Hardy is an MMA fighter is because of his domestic violence history. He's a very, very good football player, defensive player of the year caliber of football player that could be on a lot of NFL teams, and his talent level, a lot of people would love to have him around from an NFL standpoint. He's not in the NFL because of this stuff. And that's why he had to switch careers. That's why he's an MMA fighter. So I've always felt like it has been a reward for him to be in the UFC and be within MMA. So I think it's just a bigger principle of why he's even in the UFC. And then something like this just exposes it to the nth level. Any thoughts on that in general, Rick?
Nope. You said it perfectly and I totally agree.
And then beyond that, I think there's another big elephant in the room here, and it's the network that this thing is going on, which is ESPN. ESPN Plus, not ESPN proper, but there's a few elements to discuss there. One is you got to think maybe the calculus of putting them on there is there's a bit of crossover appeal. I think most people watching ESPN know who and what Greg Hardy is. So maybe there's some logic of putting him on. Okay, let's get him on an ESPN card. And nowadays, most cards are going to be ESPN cards anyway. So there is that. But the other issue is how much is ESPN themselves going to push back and question on this? This is something we saw with Fox, most specifically with Ariel Helwani when he was removed from Fox for his reporting when he was on the pregame show. And I'm like, I'm waiting to see. MMA media kind of stopped asking about it this week when they were told to. And there's been a lot of controversy on that. Like, why are you just doing what the UFC tells you to do as independent reporting? But I'm really interested to see what ESPN does in this situation. How much will they push back? How much will they ask questions, ask the tough questions of Dana White? Fox was always so willing to just bend to whatever the UFC said or wanted to do as long as they were going to be a big partner. And Rick, we've talked about this since last year, that on ESPN, the UFC is such a small fish in their sea comparative to what they were over on Fox and over on FS1 in the sports landscape. So I'm wondering what we see. Are we going to see these human interest pieces on Greg Hardy and how he's rehabilitated himself? Or are we going to see some pushback? Are we going to see some tough questions? And I think that's another thing to consider from Dana White is you made this relationship potentially very complicated right from the very beginning.
Yeah. Greg Hardy just seems to be a big headache that doesn't really bring anything positive to the table. Even like you said, he's famous now more for his domestic issues than he is for his actual athletic accomplishment. So, Dana, this is just another – is this the hill that Dana wants to really stand on and battle people with, like the Greg Hardy? Like, come on.
Right. I mean, like, you could defend – like, you know, he always says he knows that Conor McGregor deep down is a good guy, gets into some trouble. I think that's a worthy hill to die on. Like, that's a worthy battle to fight. You know, he had to fight for the legitimacy of MMA. That's worthy. This stuff? This just takes you back. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not – yeah, right, exactly. And like, what are you going to do if he becomes, like, a big star? Are you just going to get – are you going to put the entire promotional train behind him?
What are you going to do if he does it again?
Exactly. How stupid would they look in that situation?
Yeah. It's just like, get away from this. Like, just – he doesn't need to be in the UFC. It's not like the heavyweight division really has to have him there. So, yeah. You know what's going to end up happening, though, is Greg Hardy is going to fight a guy and he's going to get knocked out cold. And that will just be kind of a moment for a lot of the fans who hate this situation happening, like a reward to some people.
Yeah, but then Dana will use that as his justification for bringing him in.
Yeah. See, it's all catharsis. It was for you guys.
Yeah, which I don't think domestic violence is the heel heat you're necessarily always looking for.
Wasn't there a wrestler who did that?
Yes.
That was like a Macho Man gimmick at one point.
The Macho Man was kind of the implication there that he was abusive towards Liz. Well, no, and then even in WCW.
Yeah, Gorgeous George. Gorgeous George, his valet towards the end, showed up with a black eye and a bash at the beach. And
even I think Nitro went off the air one time with like Macho Man smacking one of the ladies. Like that was the.
But he still got cheered.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, okay, but I'm the optics aside, Greg Hardy ain't no Macho Man.
No,
I think even in the WWF, Russo booked a thing. Was it like Headbanger Mosh or one of them, where it was like the implication that he was beating the woman.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, yeah. When Vince Russo's tangentially booking your UFC cards over here, you know you've got a big problem. But what a headache that Dana created. That didn't have to be, like you said, like there's no need for any of this. And I do feel so bad for Ostovich, even if she's okay with it. Well, you know what? She's going to have to answer questions about it the whole week leading up to the fight. Like, how awful is that for her?
You just want to move on and just like, you know, do your fight and just like, hey, what did you think about Greg Hardy? And then it's like, now you're also in the situation where you say you're okay with it. And then the people supporting you about your recent event are being like, well, then why? You know, it's just like, it's not, you're right. I never even thought of it from that perspective. How terrible to be her right now.
Right. And even if she said she's fine with it and she may be fine with it, she already was sadly put in a bad situation. And then it's worse. Like it's one of those things you talk about and you just like, you feel like you need a shower after, after discussing. Let's move on to Dana White and his opinion on the welterweight situation. He definitely him and Tyron Woodley are never going to be best friends, would you say?
No, I don't. I think Tyron Woodley and a lot of people aren't going to be best friends. And I think Dana White and a lot of people aren't going to be best friends. This is becoming, it's not as heated as Dana Tito Ortiz, but it's kind of up there.
It's just, yeah, it never ends. And the latest is that he wants to book a, I don't know if it'd be a unification belt, because I still don't know if Covington actually is or isn't the champion, the interim champion in the welterweight, but he wants to book Covington Woodley very, very soon. Apparently neither guy's really ready. Dana White goes on this big old thing, say, oh, when is Woodley ever ready for a fight? Like, the dude just fought like 2 months ago. Like, take it easy there.
Right.
Dana. And so now he wants to put, it was Askren and Lawler. As in, Askren's never even fought in the company, and he's going to, you know, put him in there. But he's all about Ben Askren now after years of kind of blacklisting him for the UFC. Now he's going to be all in on Askren. I don't know what the hell's going on here. Like, is there any, this is obviously much less serious than what we just discussed. But again, is there any need for this headwind?
Well, it's funny too, because if he really doesn't like Tyron Woodley, what is the best thing to do? Make him make his buddy fight Ben Askren for the interim title, and then force Ben Askren and Tyron Woodley to fight. Like, I think that ultimately, like, because I think we all know or think that Ben Askren's going to beat Robbie Lawler. It's just going to, that's what's going to happen. And I don't want it to happen. I like Robbie Lawler a lot. But I think there's a very strong chance that Ben Askren comes out victorious in that fight. I think that if you made that the main event of a pay-per-view for the interim title, no one would really complain, even though it's not really a deserved interim title fight. Like you said, Ben Askren hasn't even fought in the UFC, but he is bringing a lot of accomplishments with him. I don't know how many pay-per-view buys that would garner, because he's probably not very well known to the mass audience, but
that'd be good on one of those ESPN Plus cards.
Yeah. And, you know, I just think that, well, I think that fight is in fact booked for the UFC 233. It's the co-main or whatever, you know, UFC 233. It doesn't have, you know, a main event right now. So you just put that on top. And then I think ultimately Dana, if he wants to screw with Tyron Woodley, it's to get an interim title on Ben Askren and make those guys fight right away, which would be kind of messed up, but Dana's done worse.
Yeah, and I understand that, like, it's not – Woodley might not be the easiest guy in the world to get along with, but it just – I don't know how it always gets to this point with the two of them. Remember when – even with Covington. Remember when it seemed like Covington and Dana were going to be BFFs, and that fell apart so quickly. I don't know what Dana's deal is with the welterweight division. God, I hope we're not in a world, though, where Ben Askren suddenly becomes the welterweight king.
Oh, I don't like Ben Askren fights. I think they're so boring. But that might be a thing that happens. And then we might actually get Ben Askren GSP one day, like we've been hearing about for 15 years.
Oh, man. If Ben Askren actually engineers his way to finally fight GSP, that.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
I don't know what Covington does, though. It's like Covington is just like he's just kind of out there, and you got Usman out there too, and it's just, you know, there's a lot of people just standing up waiting around. But it's too bad, because right now welterweight could be the most exciting division. Honestly, it has a lot of guys in there that can shake things up,
and a great mix of young and old fighters.
Yeah, you could steal from middleweight, some lightweight guys could move up, and it could just be this mix. But this Tyron Woodley era has just been so underwhelming for me. And I know that, you know, he beat Darren Till and, you know, that kind of, you know, people are like, oh, Tyron Woodley, you know, he's looking like he might be generating some buzz. And then we hear nothing from him. And that fight itself, like Tyron Woodley, in my opinion, looking back, didn't look like this devastating, like, world beater in that fight. I'd look like Darren Till didn't throw a frickin' punch. And he didn't. I think he threw one punch that entire fight. And it's two rounds. And so I just – something needs to happen. I think Dana just desperately wants to strip Tyron Woodley from the his title away, but he just can't. Welterweight's going to have three guys with interim titles and just so frustrating.
Well, because logically there's never really been a reason to do it, even though Dana wants it to happen so bad. Like in the first year of his reign, he fought three times in a year, which is pretty active as a champion. Then he had the injury – when they sniped back at each other through the injury, of course. So he did miss significant amount of time, but he was injured in that time. And that's when Covington was awarded the interim, but then he fought right back off of the injury. So it's not like he's been this inactive fighter, but it just keeps coming to a head. Like you said, maybe it is like a Tito and Dana thing where it's just like, my goodness, why can these guys not just get along? And it's always so funny to me also with Woodley. It's like, you would think Woodley, the way that him and Dana keep sniping at each other, that he would be like blacklisted from all things UFC. But no, nope, he's always there on the FS1 shows, and he's very public and very prominent. It's just when it comes to scheduling fights, they're just never on the same page.
You know, and if he was kind of the guy who was being professional and I don't know how this is going to sound, but I don't mind him on the UFC post-fight shows and the pre-fight shows and stuff. But as soon as he becomes Tyron Woodley, the fighter, and he almost becomes like he gets into like this character, you know, like the Tyron Woodley champion character. And he's wearing these glasses, these really big glasses. And he just becomes somebody else. Like, and I know Michael Bisping does the same thing, you know, when he's not going to say all the things he would say to promote a fight on fight night as he would when he's behind the desk. But I think that Tyron Woodley, like, he's got this like split personalities, and that sometimes for me, it's just hard to, I think I would enjoy him more if he didn't do the commentary and he just was Tyron Woodley, whoever he is, just more often. I don't know what I'm trying to say. He's just, I don't know who he is.
I think that's just a general problem with that format of having active fighters there.
Yeah, it only works like, for DC and Dominic.
Right. Remember when like Bisping, and I think DC is actually really good when he's just up at the desk versus when he's on commentary. But remember like when Bisping and Woodley were trying to maybe get a fight with each other and had to pretend to hate each other for like 5 minutes?
Yeah, it was dumb.
It's dumb. Or was it Tony Ferguson and Kevin Lee had to have their kind of like spout to promote it? And I know in other sports, like when a team gets eliminated from the playoffs, maybe their star player will come on the ESPN pregame show or something like that. The difference is that there's inherently a lot less self-promotion to team sports than there is to right. fighting. So there's almost a responsibility that these fighters have to promote themselves when they're on those shows. So that's why that turns into that. I don't know how this gets sorted out. All I know is I just think Woodley's still going to be the champion like 2 years from now, and Dana's still going to be frustrated.
I know. Yeah, welterweight division went from like during the Robbie Lawler era to like fighting your candidate fights like every like once every 6 months to just like the snooze fest.
Lightweight took the mantle from them.
Oh, I think definitely. And it's just too bad because – this, like I said, this division could just be as exciting. We need more exciting divisions. I mean, we got this women's flyweight division that's just a snoozer as of now. You know, it's been around for probably, well, I don't even know how long it's been around, a year and a half, and it's nothing's happened. And, you know, we got these, we just need more exciting, we're due for an exciting era sometime at some point. You know, I don't know when, but I hope it happens soon.
No, and to your point, it's kind of across the board. Yep. Heavyweight's really like three guys, and two of them aren't even really in the division. Those same three guys are also the top guys at light heavyweight. It's happened. You know, we don't even know if we have a men's flyweight division. It's kind of the case across the board right now in the UFC. Yeah. And there's always talk about creating more divisions, but like, are they going to be exciting?
No, and I definitely think they're going to try to create a division between lightweight and welterweight. I think that's going to happen at some point. And it's going to be another lackluster division. They just grant Conor McGregor the title. It's going to be the Conor division.
Make Nate the champion right away. You don't have to book him for a fight. Just give him the belt.
Here you go.
He'd be like Bischoff and Triple H back in 02. And it's just like, here you
go. Then just laughing their butts off.
All right. Let's laugh about the card coming up this Saturday. A pretty good main event here in the lightweight division. You got Kevin Lee taking on Raging Ally Aquenta. Both guys relatively recent off of their failed bids to become interim or sort of kind of undisputed light heavyweight champions. Raging Ally coming off of that performance against Khabib with that crazy, crazy, crazy fight week that somehow started with Ferguson and Khabib went to Holloway and Khabib. And we landed on Raging Al, and a dolly got thrown through the window in all of that. And that was the fight where there was a lot of praise being heaped on Ally Aquenta's boxing prowess, which may have been a little overplayed. And as Khabib says, how many rounds did he win in that fight? Which I thought was a great line from Khabib. With that said, though, I think the stock of Raging Al definitely got raised within that fight. And he's taken on Kevin Lee. Kevin Lee had his shot a year ago at Ferguson, kind of looked like he had that staph infection and got pretty outclassed in that fight, but then had a very impressive win over Edson Barbosa back in April. So he seemed to be getting back on track. Who you got in this one, Rick?
I got Kevin Lee. I think that he's going to win this fight. I think Raging Al had looked impressive, like you said, in his last fight, but I'm not going to get too ahead of myself for that situation. I will say, though, the real winner is whoever made that poster, because it is pretty impressive. I like the color scheme very much. But it's a solid main event. You know, I don't know. I just I think we'll talk about it in a minute. But as far as like the swan song for the UFC on Fox cards go, this is not the way I would end it.
You're like kind of on the lower end.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Lee potentially could have been, you know, a big guy for the UFC. He's number four in the lightweight division, but he just so far hasn't panned out to be that person. He's one of those people, too, who is much more of a – he has much more of an interesting character than he does interesting fights. Mm-hmm. I thought his fight against Edson Barboza was good, and it's ironic that they're both on the card together. I wonder if – does that ever get weird? Like when you're like getting warmed up or you're going to the press junkets or doing all the things that involve in a fight card and you run into the guy that you beat to a pulp for five rounds.
Hey, how's your concussions?
Yeah, yeah. How's your head? But yeah, I think that Ale Quinta is going to be going to put up a good fight. But, you know, Kevin Lee's going to do something similar to what Habib did to him, where just control him and box him a little bit. And we might get a finish, but I think we're going to go all five rounds on this one.
Yeah, and I don't think that Lee, the problem where he might kind of seem disappointing is that I think he was fast tracked a little bit to that opportunity. I mean, before he fought Ferguson, he was fighting Chiesa on a, you know, on a fight night, on a Sunday night fight night. So it wasn't like that was the people were just chomping at the bit for him to come up. But that I think we were in the figuring out what Habib and McGregor and all those guys were going to do. So he just kind of won the prize there. So I think there was a little bit of overzealousness on the UFC's part. And so I do think we need to kind of take a step back and see if he is going to be that guy. With that said, I think he's a much better fighter than Ray Janelle, despite losing to him many, many years ago. I think Ale Quinta did look good against Habib because Ale Quinta is a professional. Like that's just kind of what he does.
Yeah.
He shows up ready. He's a good fighter. But I don't think he's a top level fighter. And like you said, this card as a whole, going out with a bit of a whimper, I would say, in the UFC on Fox, we'll quickly breeze through the rest of the main card. Edson Barboza versus Dan Hooker, pretty good fight, but nothing spectacular. Rob Font taking on Sergio Pettis, again, a name, but not something that we're going to be so enthused at, other than the fact that it's happening at bantamweight, which I think could be fun for Sergio Pettis and good to see him moving up there. And then the opener on the main card on Fox, Jim Miller taking on Charles Oliveira. So they found a way to split up the Oliveiras by one event this time, so I can stop being as confused.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Overall, though, yeah, what do you make of this as a Fox card? I know you said this is completely on the lower end, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's on the bottom of the barrel. I think the main event could be interesting, but not very exciting. I think the co-main event has potential for some fireworks. Dan Hooker is an exciting striker. Edson Barboza is a very well-known striker, sort of on the decline at this point. But, you know, that doesn't mean they can this is more of a fight for Dan Hooker to win or just Edson Barboza to kind of stand in the same place. Rob Font versus Sergio Pettis, like you said, it's going to be interesting to see what it looks like when Pettis has been moved up. I have never been too hyped up for a Sergio Pettis fight. Unlike his brother, Anthony Pettis, Sergio Pettis has never been known to have the exciting fights. And so I might actually forget this one even happens. And Jim Miller and Charles Oliveira, two names that have never really quite gone anywhere. And that's me being incredibly hypercritical of everybody on this card because I think this is a weak card. And I feel mad that I even have to watch it.
Which usually isn't the case with the UFC on Fox cards. Like those are the funnest cards of the year in a lot of ways.
The last one was great.
They're always pretty good because they have big names that have high stakes and like they're pay-per-view quality fights, maybe not always pay-per-view made events, but they're generally pay-per-view quality fights that you would see on a pay-per-view that go through there. They have the quick pacing. It's over quickly. Like that's why even in some underwhelming eras, the Fox cards are usually the best of the bunch. Let's talk about, this is the last one ever though. And in fact, these aren't the last fights ever on Fox in the Fox branch, because there will be the prelims for the Jones Gustafson fight. But in general, this is the last full on card that'll ever be on Fox. Last week you had the last ever fight night, and this is the last UFC on Fox. Rick, we're sort of waxing poetic about the history of this series. What are some of your memories from this series?
Well, you know, if we're going to just talk about UFC and Fox and not just UFC on FS1, in general, what was the idea originally with UFC on Fox? Would they be giving, they'd be giving cards that were almost pay-per-view worthy, but on the big Fox to kind of introduce people into this sport? And I say that at the top, you know, you started with Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos, and big heavyweight fight. It garnered a big audience, and it was over in a matter of seconds. And from there, it just seemed like UFC was like, ah, we're not too sure what to do with this. So occasionally they would give us really great main events, and sometimes they wouldn't. And so I think it's been a really back and forth situation. And we can talk about the UFC and Fox era at some point. In fact, that would be a great holiday show right there, just to look at everything in general. But I would say that for the most part, the UFC and Fox has been a place where the champion who isn't selling as well gets relegated to. Benson Henderson at one point ruled UFC on Fox. like if you look at like the 2014 era to some point in 2015, like Benson Henderson was all over that era. I mean, even 2012, you had like, you started off with like Velasquez, Dos Santos, Evans, Davis, Diaz, Miller. And then Shogun Vera. I really remember the Shogun Vera UFC and Fox very well. But then after that, Benson Henderson and Mighty Mouse kind of main evented almost all of them for a couple of years. And so I think that's where it found its lane, and it never really got brought up from that.
I think that was a good lane for those fights, though.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You get title fights on free TV. That's great. It's just, you know, it was Mighty Mouse and Benson Henderson, so it wasn't going to get the biggest audience, and a lot of those fights went to five rounds. And see, too, so I personally have a fond spot for all that in my heart. You know, like the 2012 to 2015, I enjoyed it thoroughly, but I wish that they didn't have any, you know, retrospect, have any, as many FS1 cards or pay-per-views or something. And but because they could have really made super cards out of these things. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is kind of a shame. They could have been a lot better than they were. I generally found them to be enjoyable. And like you said, they were either the champ that didn't draw or the number one contender fight, because those weren't always on pay-per-view. So like someone who would win, you would see in a title shot very, very quickly. And so I think that's what made them pretty interesting to happen. And there's some really notable stuff that happened on these cards. And what I enjoyed about them is as they sort of settled into their rhythm, they became these quarterly cards, and you kind of knew what season you were in of the UFC. Like you knew that you had your, you might get the one in like January. So you knew you're kind of starting the year. You'd get the April one. You'd get the summer one, and then you may get the August one, and then you'd get football season off, and then you'd get the one that we're headed into this week. So I kind of liked the symmetry of how they broke them up. One that I remember at the time being so into, and it's funny to think of where all these fighters are now, but the Demetrius Johnson, John Dotson fight that was so hyped up to that point was just such a fun card that I really liked. And you had Glover Teixeira and Quentin Rampage Jackson. You had Anthony Pettis and Donald Cerrone. Cerrone got taken out very, very quickly in that one. You had Ricardo Lamas on that one. To me, that was like the peak of that era of those type of fights. It was all guys you recognized. There was not a lot of having to research who these guys were. And I think another piece of that was guys that were past their prime that still had a name would be on those cards. So that's where they would hover around to. And it wasn't the Michael Johnson, Nate Diaz fight, a Fox card, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so. I was just actually, well, the only Diaz main event. Oh, I see. That was a co-main event. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where Diaz. Yeah, exactly.
He called out McGregor.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
And that like changed everything.
Yeah, it did. It really did. Changed the course of the sport. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. I was I was just counting. So Mighty Mouse main evented 4 UFC on Fox cards. So he was kind of the champion of the show. And then Benson Henderson, I believe, main evented 3. So between the two of those guys, they're both, you know, they were dominant champions to a certain point, but they were also very unmarketable. And so I think that was their home. And like you said, guys like Shogun main evented 1 or 2. And then, you had just an array of different people. It's a really kind of an eclectic mix of names when you're looking at the list. But for me personally, I really remember the Henderson-Diaz UFC on Fox very, very, very well. That was in December 2012. That was, I believe, the 5th UFC on Fox they did. And that was main evented by Benson Henderson versus Nate Diaz. And the co-main event was Shogun versus Gustafsson. And BJ Penn went against Rory McDonald. And then that's when Rory was kind of on his way up and BJ Penn just got thoroughly dominated. And Matt Brown went against Mike Swick. And that's kind of the beginning of Mike Brown's sort of ascension into that winning streak he had for a while. So, yeah, there's definitely been moments and eras being highlighted on the UFC on Fox. And I was appreciative to have it around. I just think that in general, though, it's too bad they weren't able to make a little bit more out of it. But maybe this, in retrospect, is the best it could have been.
Yeah, I just think – and it's not really UFC on Fox's fault. I think it's the fight night, the regular fight nights.
Yeah.
That were the drain. And I think the Fox cards have that stain on them, even though they're not related. I think you kind of lump them in your brain as UFC on Fox products. So you just think of them as these long – boring cards, which they really weren't, and I think the pacing of them is their ultimate legacy. I don't know if we ever get that again, even on the proper ESPN, because ESPN doesn't. It's not like they're going on ABC. You know what I mean? ESPN is a cable network that they can control what goes on when, and they have the ultimate timeliness. So we might not ever get these kind of quick, efficient cards ever again, because they're not going on network television where they got to get out of the way for local news.
Yeah, I always thought that USC and Fox, their production value was always really nice too. They had Ron Perlman do the intros, you know, the voiceovers, and they kind of made a thing out of it. And we'll see how that continues. I'm all for speed on my cards. And so I think that if one thing of the pacing of the Fox, not the FS1 cards, but the Fox cards, how they had the 3 or 4 fights and they just went bam, bam, one after another, finish you up in 2.5 hours. If that goes away when they're on the big UFC on ESPN, that's going to be unfortunate, because that's the one thing I really did look forward to, is just, okay, this main card on Fox will not take a super long time.
Right. And for those of us who live on the western part of the United States, you could even go out after them, which was nice.
Yeah, absolutely. So hopefully that continues on ESPN, but we'll see.
Yeah, you know what's not going to continue is this show. I think we're going to be done for this week talking about the legacy of UFC on Fox. We'll get out of here. We'll hope to bring you a great show next week. There's a ton going on. We have a John Jones fight lingering right around the corner. We have some discrepancies maybe with Brock Lesnar and his USADA pool. I don't know about that. Dana White talking a lot about Brock Lesnar this week. I don't know what the result of any of that's going to be, but we will definitely keep you informed. Rick, do you have anything you want to plug right now?
No, I'm good. I just want to say, everybody, thank you for listening and looking forward to the future.
Great, great, great. And you can follow me on Twitter, Rob M. Vallejos. That's RobMVallejos. And you can follow the brand as a whole at MMA Torch. That's at MMATORCH. And follow the show, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, at MMA Livecast. That's at MMALIVECAST. And you can also send us an email. We didn't have an email this week. We didn't hear from one of our good friends, Patrick in Germany or Valentin from Russia or any of you guys. So we definitely need emails to fill out the show. And the email address is MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALIVECAST@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out all the Torch-related brands. Of course, check out MMA Torch. Tons of new stuff going up there all the time. In fact, we've got a new podcast feed that's exclusive to MMA Torch. And you have the MMA Torch Today podcast with David McGrath going up on there, where he goes in depth on the fights and his impressions and even some boxing stuff on there. So a lot of good stuff over at MMA Torch. Go to pwpodcast.com. PW Torch Livecast, and our good friend Zach Halen was on with Rich Fan just yesterday discussing the importance of entrances in wrestling. And of course, as always, go VIP. So you can pour through those archives and listen to that audio. There's a ton of stuff there. This week, we've had some untimely passings within the world of pro wrestling. Both the Dynamite Kid and Larry the Axe Henning passed away this past week. And you can really get career retrospectives of people, you know, the interviews that Wade and the team is conducting right now in real time. But you can also look back at some of the legacies of those guys' careers and what their impressions with them were. Not necessarily during the height of their careers, but after their careers had ended and the legacy they had left and what people were saying shortly thereafter. So a ton of stuff to check out, of course. But that is going to do it for Rick and I this week. So we are done. We are out of here. We will talk to you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip. And you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. No!